Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Hey, welcome. This is episode 7 of Finding Your Identity. It is part 2 of the series, I suppose you can call it, or the two-part series of practicing safe internet. I'm going to continue talking about how to practice safe internet because it is an important thing to know. Now, the last time, you know, I talked about VPNs, which was essentially giving you the ability to mask your actions on the internet, and also talked about being careful when you click on links. Now, I want to start off and talk about some good practices when you're browsing the internet. For instance, when you visit a website, it's recorded in the browser history. Everything is stored, and it's meant to be out of convenience so that you can easily pull up a web page. They call it caching, so it's stored in a way where all of the assets assets that are associated with the web page, the images and any media like videos, audio, stuff like that, is essentially saved locally in your browser on your computer so that it can load faster. So it's a good feature, having things cached, but it also means it's remembering everything that you looked at. Now, there's obviously a trade-off. You're going to get the pages loading faster, but potentially, your browser is kind of storing all this information, which is in the form of cookies, and it's storing it in the browser memory. So it's, saving whatever you were doing. So as a good measure, I like to encourage people to clear their history frequently, specifically clear cookies. You don't necessarily have to clear cache, even though clearing cache is also part of the steps of erasing your privacy data from a browser. If you're going to do this purge, you might as well just do everything, but you do have options as to what you can choose. Now, if you're in Chrome, it's the most popular browser out there these days, and if you're in Chrome, you just go into settings, you navigate, if you're on a phone, you're going to click on the little menu icon, and you're going to search for privacy or privacy data or something to that effect. And what you'll do is you'll dig into there, and you'll see something that says erase or clear history or clear privacy data, something along those lines. And once you get to the section where you are able to clear that, you're going to see in Chrome, you'll see two options, which I guess it depends if you're on the mobile browser on your phone or tablet, or if you're on a desktop, on a computer, personal computer, it depends, but you'll sometimes just see the option as basic or advanced. So what you have to do is, click into advanced to really see all the options of what you can clear. There's also certain site settings and sometimes it's like media licenses, there's other things that get stored too. I mean, the main thing is the browser history. You got the browser history, you got the cache, and you got the cookies, and you're essentially trying to wipe out those three things, but clearing site settings, clearing any other means that of storing your personal info or your local browsing habit info, you want to clear all that stuff. Now, there's usually also the option to clear it for just the day, or potentially for all time, as Google calls it. I think you have to kind of decide, well, I'm going in here for a reason to clear all this stuff, that really you should be doing it everything. I think You can be selective too, because it also has stored passwords. It has stored form. You know, if it's a contact form or you know, address form or whatever it is, that stuff is stored. You can choose to not check those off so that they remain. So your passwords will still be saved in your browser, and your auto complete or auto fill information, as they call it, will still be there. So when you go to fill out an address, it'll just pull, you know, a little drop down, and you'll be able to pull, you know, pull up your address info quicker. So, you know, that is one thing that is beneficial, is storing that info, so you don't have to clear that info. But, you know, I do recommend clearing the cookies, because you're trying to sever the connection, in a sense, to the advertisers or the data analytics firms. You know, so you're really trying to kind of cut that off, and the best way to do that is to clear cookies. You know, and you clear your browser history, just because it actually, all that stuff builds up in your computer, you know, on your phone. You know, that's all stuff that has to be stored somewhere. It has to be stored on whatever device it is. So, you know, you have to imagine it's also kind of healthy for the device to do this clearing, especially if you use multiple browsers. And considering everything ends up at the browser, you know, when it comes to the internet, most things, I should say, not everything, but you know, apps generally have some kind of what they call a web view. So it is, to some degree, using a browser, even though it's inside of an app. You know, Amazon does it and Facebook does it. You know, it doesn't look like it. It's pretty seamless, but it's still underlying, you know, using a default browser. So, you know, that stuff just kind of keeps building up. So it's a good idea to just clear that stuff out anyways. It helps your devices run a little bit faster. Now, there's, you know, one tool in particular that I recommend, and I don't really have any other suggestions for an app like this, because this is the one that I've been using for many years, and I think it works great. It's called CCleaner. It's just the letter C and then cleaner. There is a free version. The company that makes it is Piriform, Piriforme. You can Google CCleaner or Piriform, and then, you know, you got to dig a little bit, but you'll find the free version is there. They do try to get you to upgrade and pay for a paid version, but generally you don't need it. You know, you could use it. They offer additional features. Obviously, if you pay, you're going to get additional features. So you could choose to upgrade, but I don't use it. I don't upgrade. I just use what I've got in the free version. Now, the free version essentially is good for going through the system and clearing at kind of a system level, clearing a lot of your history and your cookies and your cache data, your, you know, stuff that's sitting on the hard drive or in memory that that is just kind of hanging out there, and you know, it's just a good idea to get rid of it. And CCleaner will even tell you, hey, you're going to free up 1 gigabyte of space on your computer by running this now, because it's basically scanned or analyzed your hard drive, and it sees that, you know, you've got Internet Explorer. I'm talking specifically on a Windows machine. You got Internet Explorer, you got Chrome, you got Firefox. You know, you probably have some other apps that maybe cache stuff, like, I don't know, Photoshop or something like that. So, you know, that being said, it's kind of like you know, this routine maintenance thing that you should be doing to clear this data, so that it's not, you know, bogging the machine down, but it's also, you know, again, this is helping you with trying to sever your ties with the big data companies that are tracking you. You know, you're severing ties by basically cutting off the data source, you know, making them have to start profiles fresh. And in a minute, I'll explain a little bit further about how this goes deeper into the online advertising. But, you know, CCleaner is what I'd recommend, because I think it's a good app for, you know, just helping you clear it out. Now, once you've got it downloaded and installed, one of the nice features is you can I think by default it actually sets this up, but it's kind of linked to your recycling bin, your trash bin, on your Windows machine. So when you right click it, it'll have an option that says, you know, run CCleaner, and that in essence will clean the trash and also run and do the, because you pretty much have all these things preset. So it'll clean your trash bin out, you know, delete all the stuff you've deleted from your computer, delete it permanently, and then actually, you know, do your clearing of your browser history and cookies and stuff like that. There are options, if you dig into it a little bit, into some of the advanced options, where you can run what they call, you know, additional passes on your data. So, you know, running it one time to delete it technically doesn't get rid of it all the way. So you can do, you know, more secure deletion. So it'll actually delete it and then, you know, run through the hard drive a second time and, you know, attempt to do another pass at deleting it. And, you know, and it's kind of fake fills the sections where they were in essence. Because really what it is, you know, deleting is really just, you know, kind of trying to cover up where you had the file located on the hard drive. It's trying to kind of fill that spot back in. You know, it'll kind of erase it by kind of clearing it out, clearing out the spot that it was in. I don't know, I'm probably doing a terrible job trying to explain this in layman's terms, but you know, just trust me when I tell you that doing multiple passes on when you're deleting data is recommended. And I think, so I would recommend that CCleaner app. I think it's a good app. Now, you got a good tool for clearing your data. And the reason why it's important is because when you start shopping online frequently, which pretty much everybody does, I mean, anyone who's on the internet, when you're shopping online, you're hitting websites that are essentially setting cookies and they're tracking your every move because they want to know, you know, what your shopping habits are, what you're looking for. They want to try to figure out what to upsell you or even just directly promote to you because they, you know, they don't know who you are when you first get there. So they use this analytics data to try to help get a sale, essentially. So, you know, this is where the e-commerce sites are really, you know, paying close attention to what you're doing. You know, you click on a car shopping site, you know, cars.com, to do a search, you know, to figure out what you want for a new car. And then you end up on a site to buy it. Like maybe it's a dealership site or a Carvana or Vroom. You know, those are two new e-commerce type sites where they're actually letting you buy cars online now. And you end up on one of those sites and you are looking at, you know, Mazda somethings. I'm trying to think of a Mazda Miata. You're looking at Mazda Miatas. It's just fun to say. So you're looking at red Mazda Miatas. Now, they get this idea that you're into that car. Now maybe, well, I don't know how much Mazda Miatas are, but let's say they're $25,000, you know, and they're thinking, well, you know, maybe they want this equally small, tiny car that's a convertible that's $30,000. So now that you've looked at that Miata, their kind of algorithms are kind of churning in the background and finding something similar that they might be able to pitch to you as like something that's an alternative, but it might cost a little bit more money. Or they see that you've looked at that car several times and you're still not ready. They may just find, you know, the equivalent in a Ford. I don't know if that's a Ford Focus. Who knows what it is, but you know, whatever the equivalent is. I guess if you look at like Toyota Camrys and Honda Accords, and that was a Camry and an Accord, and I'm sure there's another car that's equally Satanized? That sounds weird. They're sedans. They're all these four-door sedans that are very similar, and probably similar in price range. Let's say they're all around like $20,000, and you know the company sees that you're looking at whatever the car you're looking at. Miatas, Focus. Oh yeah, I guess there's the Taurus. Maybe the Taurus and the Camry and the Accord. And you're looking at these three cars, but you started off looking at that Focus and or Taurus. I keep saying Focus. And you're looking at that Taurus and you're thinking, I'm interested in this, but I don't know. Like, there's something about it I don't like. So you're on the first couple pages and you're looking at it, and then next thing you know, you're going to another page, and now they're suggesting to you. This is what I was trying to get to in a long roundabout way. You get to another page, and now they're suggesting the Camry or the Accord because they sell those as well, and you didn't seem to be interested, and they don't want to lose you. You know, they don't want to lose you because you weren't really sold on the Taurus. So they're trying to throw something else at you to be like, hey, but, you know, because these are online, you know, digital AI salespeople, you know, that these ads are like trying to, you know, coax you to stay inside and not walk off the lot because they want you to buy something today, and they don't want you to leave because if you abandon the site and you haven't made a purchase, you know, that's lost potential for them to make money. So they're trying with, you know, advertisements. Now all this stuff has to happen based off of storing something about you and about your purchase. So, you know, you hit this website and okay, now they've got your IP address. And now they can associate an IP address with an actual vehicle that you're looking at. So they can make this assumption, okay, this IP address, we can say that this is in, you know, Hartford, Connecticut, and we know that's the location. And now we're tying to, okay, well, this IP address is a John Doe right now. So let's say he's, you know, in Hartford looking for a four-door sedan that's like a Taurus, but maybe is a Camry or maybe an Accord. So you got all this information that's sitting there, and it's now gathered and it's built this little profile. Now, if they can get you to take a next step to get in some kind of mailing list, you know, subscribe to a newsletter for whatever reason, or sign up for, you know, free whatever consultation with a sales rep, or make an appointment to go see a car. They get your email address, maybe your first name, your last name, maybe a phone number. Now you've got all that information that is now tied to that purchase history, or that not the purchase history, but the search history when you're looking to purchase a car. So now they've built this profile. Now this data tracker, whoever it is looking at it, and they're like, whoa, okay, so we got Derek McKinney looking at a Ford Taurus, potentially a Camry, he's in Hartford, Connecticut, you know, this is the price range that he seems to be looking in, because he's only looked at cars around $20,000, and, you know, now I've got this little profile going with him, but he still left the site, so now what? So the advertising companies now working with these data analytics companies, they leverage it because now they can actually spot your IP address on another website that's in this advertising network, and they can actually show you an ad for that Camry or that Honda Accord or the Taurus on another website completely unrelated. You could be on you know, a clothing store site or shopping for jewelry or whatever, guitars. You're on a completely different site unrelated to cars, but the ad has followed you now, and it's tracked back so well that they've got this profile and they tied it to your IP address. So now, hey, now they got another potential to, you know, way of getting you back to that website to buy that car. So as you can kind of see this pattern developing, these profiles, that's how powerful they are. And that's why I suggest this thing about, you know, clearing your cookies or clearing your cache history, stuff like that. But here's the rub with that, because if you were to just from the start just enable private browsing, which every browser provides, none of that data could really be tracked. very accurately, but there's still like a way for them to track it because they've got your IP address and they still can tie it to a car that you looked like. A car you looked at, you know, and also if you signed up and you logged in, they can still store that data and that's still kind of associated to that IP address. So even if you clear your history and you clear your cache and you clear your cookies, they can still build this profile. So the other step that you have to take is you actually have to go to the ad itself and find the little button that's somewhere on the ad that will let you click on it and take you to the Advertising Alliance, whatever one it is, where you can opt out and you can actually purge your data. So you can actually go on to the affiliate sites or the alliance sites or whatever they call them, and purge all the data that they have on you that they've recorded, you know, from whatever they first recording it. You have to basically go in and you have to click a series of buttons and take a series of steps, but you can clear that data. You can request that data is wiped out. And it's amazing because as soon as you do it and you go through the steps, it may take you, 5 to 10 minutes, but go back to that same site and refresh the page and you'll notice that that ad now is not the ad for the cars. Like, it's something generic, something, you know, just out of their generic ad network. So they don't have your profile and they're not targeting you specifically now. So, you know, that's a good way to kind of clear yourself from that system, you know. But it is tricky because you actually have to come across an ad where you're seeing those personalized ads and you have to click through them and you have to go through the steps and you have to purge that data. Now the other one, you know, that, you know, in recent months, years, but it's really been in recent months that big privacy concerns have popped up, obviously with Facebook, but Google too. But, you know, now you can go in and you can just search my activity in Google and you'll find your Google activity and you can purge your location history, because if you're using Google, especially if you have an Android device, you know, they just have it turned on. So, you know, or if you want to go and use Google Assistant, you know, sometimes you're kind of opting into location tracking. So, they want to be able to, enhance the experience, like in quotes, enhance the experience. So they'll say, you know, leave your location history on if you go into Google Maps, and so that they, that way they can pop up things and suggest restaurants or suggest whatever they think you might be interested in. But that means that they're tracking your every movement. So you can actually go clear all of your location history. You can clear your browsing history. You can clear your history for what you search on YouTube, what you search in Google, what photos you might have searched in Google Images, like any of the Google products, like everything is tracking you. So that's the other side of it, is there's the massive search engine, which is Google, that's tracking everything. And it really wasn't until the European Union kind of stepped in and they got the GDPR laws, which, you know, essentially they passed laws that says that, you know, Google has to give, basically people have the right to be forgotten. So in Europe, you know, Google isn't allowed to store that data, or it needs to provide a way for people to delete all that data. And it's not mandatory in the United States yet, but they still provide the options for purging your data, because it's kind of interesting that the European Union did that, but the United States is still not doing it. Anyways, that's one thing that you know you can have easy control over, is your Google data can be purged relatively easy just by Googling my activity. And the GDPR stands for General Data Protection Regulation. I just looked it up because I was trying to remember what it was called, because it's not obvious. But, you know, that's why now you get the annoying little pop-ups on most sites that says, you know, be aware that we use cookies because, you know, they have to legally tell everybody that there's tracking cookies on a website. So, you know, everybody is kind of getting annoyed by it and aware of it. And that's why you got a whole slew of emails that came out that basically talked about all the privacy policies and how they collect data and use your data. You know, that's all related to the whole GDPR being passed in the European Union. So I think it's just being aware. Again, this is all about creating awareness. It's why I'm doing this. I'm trying to help people be aware of what's going on. Now, if you choose to ignore things and you know, do nothing, then that's your decision. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's a wise decision, but I'm going to say it's your decision. You're free to do that. So, let's see. The next thing that I wanted to cover, because, you know, in practicing safe internet, I think it's important to know, you know, things like identity theft, or catfishing, just to kind of give a quick explanation. I think a lot of people are familiar with identity theft. I think it all ties back to what I started the last episode on, was being aware of what links you're clicking. And, you know, most of the time, these companies are not just going to send you emails saying, oh, I need all this information, your social security number, birthday, mother's maiden name, cat's first name, you know, how many times your cat goes to the bathroom during a day. Like, all of those things that could be security questions that could be used to log into your account. And, you know, that's what hackers are trying to obtain. And that's what phishing is. Now, that's basically what, you know, helps them steal identities, because they got enough information about you to make up their own profile. You know, this is the hackers doing it, but they've created a profile that they're essentially, you know, now able to take and go out and apply for credit cards and apply for credit. Now, you know, in that same vein, as a sidebar, there's, you know, a way to freeze your credit. So you can go to all the major credit bureaus and, you know, you just Google like each one, Experian and Equifax and TransUnion, I think is the other one. You just Google each of those and freeze my credit report, and you can freeze your credit report. So that way, you know, these criminals can't go opening new lines of credit with your username and not your username, but your first name, last name, social security card, but basically your identity. They won't be able to actually go and do that, because your credit report will be frozen. So that basically means that I believe they has to send a notification email to you at the email address that you provide when you freeze your credit report. So I even think you might have to even call in. I actually haven't looked into it, and, you know, kind of shame on me, I haven't actually froze my credit reports yet, but I'm gonna do it tomorrow. Sure. But, you know, when you do that, it is something that helps prevent identity theft, because it essentially slows down the criminals. It puts them at a stop. They can't open up new lines of credit. They can't go open up credit cards in your name. So it's a good idea to do that. Now, you know, I think I've emphasized, you got to be careful of the phishing emails, and, you know, you got this identity theft. But what can I say about e-commerce shopping now? You know, what's coming up now? I think that one is important to cover too. You know, buying things online. Now, being a smart shopper is just going to save you money, but it's also, I think, a way of protecting yourself online, because, you know, you're less likely to fall for online shopping scams, or, you know, get chipped or duped. You know, if I kind of provide you some guidelines here, like, I think you can agree that these all kind of make sense in the grand scheme of things. Now, I like to do research before I purchase anything online. I like to start off on Amazon. You know, if Amazon, for whatever reason, doesn't have that product and it's specialized, it makes it a little harder, but then sometimes you can find it on eBay. But also, you know, you can maybe find stuff at Walmart or Best Buy, but, You know, a lot of times I think it's just a matter of doing the research. I think, you know, if you really want something and you can wait a little bit and be patient to get it, you could generally find a better deal when you search around. And I think a lot of people just do that now because it's a lot easier. You know, you can do your research. But some of the tricks that I use is, you know, if I go to Amazon, generally it's because I'm impulsive and impatient and I really want to see it delivered tomorrow or the next day. And that's what makes Amazon such a powerful company, because you're getting these things for cheaper, generally speaking, than most places. And then it's also showing up the next day. You know, sometimes though, you'll find that there are actual deals at Walmart. They may be running some kind of special or have a coupon, or Best Buy, same deal. They might have a coupon or be running a special. Now, you know, if you start looking, like, there are third-party sellers through Walmart, so they could potentially be selling it for cheaper. Amazon, of course, you know, has other sellers. You may be able to get it for 10% cheaper, maybe, you know, 15% cheaper if it's refurbished or it's used through Amazon. You know, they have third-party sellers. Sometimes it's not covered by Amazon through Prime. I'm wary of those because I don't like that you don't necessarily get the same protections. I mean, you do pretty much get the protections of most things you buy through Amazon unless it says otherwise, but when it's Prime, you know that it's somehow going through Amazon's distribution network, and you know it's a lot easier to return that kind of an item. So I generally, you know, I'll take my chances in other places and hope that I'm taking the chance because it's going to benefit me, because I'm going to save even more money. That's when I'll jump on to, you know, eBay, and I'll look and see if there's refurbished or used items there. But sometimes I just start my search off on a site called slickdeals.net, which, you know, it's a community of users that are reporting deals on items, and so popular items. So say you want to buy a Kindle, or you want to buy some AirPod ear headphones, you know, you might start on slickdeals. But you may not find anything. All the offers might have expired. You know, you'll generally see a ton of stuff around Black Friday. You'll see stuff sometimes, you know, end of January, maybe they're getting rid of inventory, extra inventory. Then you'll see stuff kind of pop up around the holidays that come up, but then it kind of gets slow. And then you get Amazon Prime Day, which now everybody's trying to capitalize on it. It's like a midsummer Black Friday, although the deals aren't that great everywhere. You know, there's a bigger illusion going on, I think, during the Amazon Prime Day. And Amazon does stuff leading up to it. And granted, they've got some stuff at the forefront of it that is a deal. But I don't know. Most of the things I haven't seen making me want to buy it that day. But, you know, I think on the first day, the first year that they did it, they had better deals, and they've kind of just tapered off. But you got other companies like Amazon. I'm sorry, that wasn't Amazon. Walmart competing with Amazon. And because of that, you might see some actually good deals come out of the Walmarts and Best Buys and even sometimes Staples. You know, generally, I'm looking for something electronics related, but it could be anything. You know, it could be printer paper. You know, it's not necessarily electronic. Obviously, it's complimentary for an electronic device, but, you know, sometimes it could be clothing. You know, you'll see Kohl's or, I don't know, Marshall's, Target. Like, they'll all be trying to capitalize in some way in an online fashion. Pun. but I think, you know, it still warrants research. Now, one of the best tools that I think exists out there for helping you do the research when it comes to the price is this thing called Honey. And Honey actually is an online or an extension tool for the browser. I mean, you have an online account with it, which of course I think you can sign in through with Google or Facebook or something. But it actually was really designed, I think, to track prices and price changes on Amazon, because it integrates pretty well. If you're on a desktop computer, it doesn't work on the Amazon app. But if you're on a desktop computer and you're logged into Honey and you've got the Honey Chrome extension in your browser, when you go to Amazon, you'll actually see the Honey little Honey logo, and the little extension is kind of embedded in the web page. And when you click on it, you can actually dig in to find the price history of that particular item. And that can be pretty powerful, because it could tell you when the last time the lowest price ever was and when the highest price was. And you can detect if there's a pattern and determine if you want to wait, and potentially you can wait another month, or you could decide, it's only going to save me $5, so I'm going to buy it right now. But either way, it lets you track that. So I think that's kind of powerful, in terms of online research. Now, I mentioned the things that I've done to help get myself the best deal, but I also want to mention this god-awful site that I just loathe. It's called Deal Dash, and there's other sites that are similar to it, but they give you this illusion that you're going to pick something up for $13. And honestly, it may be $13 for that particular auction, but they don't really disclaim the fact that you need to buy tokens or buy bids, and it could cost you thousands of dollars bidding on many auctions to try to get the MacBook Pro for, $20 or whatever it is. So it's really kind of deceptive. And every time I see the ad, I cringe, because it just makes me think, it makes people think that you can actually get these products for that cheap, but doesn't really tell you the amount that you have to invest into it to get to that point. And potentially you're spending thousands of dollars just learning how the game works, because it's an auction site and you got to learn how to operate within it, So I often, tell people beware of that one. And I haven't really came across many people who've kind of fallen for that. But, I think in this, in the vein of practicing safe internet, that's a site that you should stay away from. I think some other, smaller tips that I think are good, rules to follow is, and you'll hear this a lot, is, all these sites that I've been talking about, and the Amazons and eBay and Walmart, as a good practice, every single site should have a different password. You should not be using the same password for multiple sites. I know it's hard. You can use apps like 1Password, that are password managers, so they're kind of local, so you have one password to log into that, and then you just copy paste the password for the individual sites, and it lets you have however many 100 different passwords, but you only have to really remember the one to get into the password manager. A password manager is a good idea to help encourage that good behavior, which is to have separate passwords for every site that you use. And I think sometimes it's just pure human laziness where we're just using the same password because we don't want to have to try to remember multiple ones. Now, I've used techniques in the past, until all the sites got hacked, but I at one point had about 5 or 6 passwords that I combine in different ways. So, I'd have password 123, and then on another site I'd go and use 312 combined, or I'd use just 2 and 6, and I'd have all these different combinations of how I'd use these 6 passwords, but every site I'd switch up the routine for how I did it. And then, I kind of got smarter and started using password generators that generate strong passwords for my whatever sites I'm logging into, and then you use 1Password to store those passwords. So, 1Password actually is what is the tool that can generate those strong passwords. You don't have to even know what the thing is, really. These days, it's a good idea to use 2-factor authentication. So you want to use, with Google, you get a token, essentially an app on your phone. It's an authentication app that has a token, and whenever you log into something, you actually have to go grab that token and then go put that token into the site, or you have another, you know, two factors. Like, there's, you know, the first factor is your password, the second factor is authenticating in some other means. So it's, you know, it could be you get a login code texted to you or emailed to you, or you've got a device, your phone, you know, actually is dedicated as the two-factor device, so you actually have to, you know, click a yes on your phone or something like that in order to authenticate. But, you know, using two-factor authentication, if you forget a password, you can just reset it, because you'll just use the two-factor authentication to create a new password, you know, essentially generate another strong unknown password, unknown to you, so that when, you know, terrorists get their hands on you and they're torturing you, you just say, I use one password, I don't know my passwords to, you know, government secrets, because who can remember that stuff, you know? So you can protect national security too by, you know, using one password. That should be their slogan. So I think that's another thing that I think people should be aware of, be conscious of, and use to help practice safe internet. And I think the last thing that I just wanted to briefly mention is, when you're paying online, you know, I actually found, you know, I've paid with PayPal, I've paid other people, I should say, you know, when I've sent money to a friend or family member, like, I've used Google Pay, I've used PayPal, I've used Venmo, and those three are great. But, you know, within the last year or so, I learned about Zelle, Z-E-L-L-E, and Zelle was great because it's part of your banking app. Now, there was no fee, and somebody had to send me money. I think it was my boss, when I was working somewhere, had to pay me back because I expensed something for an event. And she had to send me $100, and she's like, "Have you tried Zelle?" And I was like, "I've heard of it, but I've never actually tried it." And it took me 2 minutes to set it up through my bank app. And I told her the email address that I use, and then she sent me the money, and it was in my bank account. Like, and it was all in a matter of, you know, 10 minutes, and it was great. You know, and I don't discount that Venmo and PayPal and Google Pay don't work well. It's just they're middlemen in some way, because, you know, you're gonna get the money transferred into those accounts, and then you got to transfer that money back to your bank, and so there could be a hold going into those accounts for a day or two, and then transferring that money to your bank could be another, you know, two business days or something like that. So, you know, if you need money fast into your bank account for some reason, you know, Zelle could work. I mean, it's also, it depends on how much, because if it's only a couple $100, it may transfer quick. If it's like $50, it may be no hold. But if it's $1,000, you know, you might be looking at, you know, a 2-day hold on it. So that's just one thing that I found useful, because I think paying online is another thing that's becoming very prevalent, you know, in this day and age on the internet. And you need to be practicing safe interneting when you're paying too. So I think that's all the things I wanted to cover. I do plan to do a future episode about, you know, helping keep your kids safe online and the steps to take to protect them, but that's going to warrant a whole separate episode, and I'll figure out when that comes. Maybe the next episode, maybe a couple from now, but we'll see. So just want to leave that with you. Well, that wraps up another episode of Finding Your Identity. I want to thank you for listening, and I hope to have you come back next time, so, you know, I could stop having to spend my spare time tracking people down, because it's really starting to get a little tiring and annoying just to track people down to watch listen to my podcast, you know. And now there's a video. You know, I decided to start recording videos. So, you know, there's a YouTube channel, which is Finding Your Identity Podcast. Well, that's not the name of the channel. It's just Finding Your Identity. But that's the Gmail that I had to create, because Google's funny like that. But anyways, I invite people to go check out the video. You could also follow Finding Your Identity on Twitter at @FY_identity, and you can hopefully comment and talk back to us, which is right now me, but you know, soon enough in the future, maybe there'll be an us or a team of us's. Who knows? I might need a bus to put all the us's on to get them to work. You never know. But you won't find out if you don't listen. And you won't see this if you don't watch. Okay. Until next time, this is Finding Your Identity. I enjoy telling random stories. It's fun. So I'm gonna tell you another story right now. I hope you enjoy. This is gonna be a crazy story. And I'm gonna say right off the bat, this is one of those scenarios where you should never, ever, ever, ever try this at home. Never try this yourself. Because it's super dangerous and stupid, and even though it makes for an interesting and enlightening story, I'll repeat, never try this at home. But when I was a teenager, and of course, you know, that's indicative of doing dumb things when you start off with when I was a teenager, but when I was a teenager, we had this, you know, group of friends and this one friend who happened to be given a sum of money. I think he was given $300 or $400 to buy clothes for school for the next school year, which was coming up. And this was probably sometime in August or maybe July. But he was given this sum of money, and we all knew about it. And of course, you know, being teenage boys, we were just on a mission to try to get some of that money from him to, you know, take us to McDonald's and pay for our meals or buy us something or whatever it was, you know, tried to get the money from him. But he, you know, had this money, and he wasn't shy about bragging about it. And, you know, we all kind of weren't shy about trying to get the money from him. But one of my friends, he was you know, he's my best friend growing up, he and I would do kind of crazy things, and we'd always be known for never backing down from some kind of dare or challenge. And so he and I said, you know, like, I wonder, like, what we could do to try to get the money from him. And so I think we were just asking random things, like, would you give us the, you know, $300 if we did blah blah blah. And eventually we landed on touch the power lines, and that was what made the kid interested in taking us up on the offer and the bet. And he said, yeah. He said, I'll give you the money in my pocket, which was $300. And we were like, no, specifically say you will give us the $300 in your pocket if we touch the power line. And of course, it was one of those things where not both people could touch it because it was up high. And then we started orchestrating this plan, and we decided, okay, the best way to do this is to get a ladder. And we can't do it in our neighborhood because our neighborhood had all underground power lines. So we decided we were going to walk up to this bridge overpass where we could touch the power lines, because we knew there were power lines there, and there was a highway that went over the top of it. But this was a back road, and there wasn't a ton of traffic down there, and we actually used to go to this corner store that was at the end of the road, and we'd get, you know, drinks and snacks, and we'd then walk down the road about quarter of a mile, and we'd actually hang out under this bridge because it was kind of cool. It was fun to just go out and hang, and there wasn't a ton of traffic down there. So we set out to figure this plan out. So the, you know, the first step was trying to figure out how to get our hands on a tall enough ladder, and it so happened that I had an extension ladder at my house that was my father's, and you know, it was I believe it was a 20-foot extension ladder, which was metal, but you know, we didn't really care because we thought, well, these are, you know, these are designed to channel the electricity, so we'll be safe. You know, that was our first thought. And also there was like rubber tips at the end that allowed us to have that same notion and carry that forward and think to ourselves, well, we're going to be fine because it's going to just channel that electricity through it and out and down into the ground, and it'll be no problem. So we decided we'd get the ladder, and then the both of us would carry this ladder up to that bridge overpass, and we debated back and forth for a little while, but it was decided that I would hold the ladder while he climbed the ladder, but we'd have equal stake in this, because if I'm holding the ladder and he does get electrocuted, then we both would get electrocuted. So that's what made it fair, and it needed to be fair in order for us to both earn this $300 evenly and be able to split it. So really, for $150 for one person, we thought it was worth our lives. So we set out, we get the ladder, and we start walking. And we, you know, get down out of our residential neighborhood, and we get up onto, it was actually a main road, and we get across the road, and it was a little ways that we had to walk up while we're on the main road, and we're getting tons of stares as people driving by. We're just ignoring them. We're like, what? We're just walking with an extension ladder. What? No big deal. It's just, you know, a group of five or six kids, you know, two of them are going to do something stupid and the rest to watch the other kids do the stupid things and hope to see something really bad happen, because that's the sickness that teenage boys have. And so we all started walking, and then the clouds started to roll in, and we could hear thunder in the background, and we're thinking, we could take this as a sign, or this just adds to the whole adventure of it. So we just continued on, and we walked and we walked. And I do remember that prior to this, my friend had said that he had asked his older brother if it was possible to touch the power lines, and the older brother said, well, as long as you don't touch the exposed wire, you just touch the plastic or rubber container that goes around the power line, you should be fine. And so, like, he told me this, but we didn't tell, like, the other friend about it, because we thought this was our advantage. As long as we could just, you know, get up there and just touch that, you know, just touch that one part of it, we'd be safe. So we, you know, had this knowledge, and we continued on it. And so then we get up there and quickly realized that this was going to be no easy task, because essentially what happened was, you're trying to hold a 20-foot extension ladder fully extended straight up in the air, one person essentially, while another person is climbing it. It's practically impossible. And so, like, we were struggling just to get this thing to stand straight up in the air and then balance it, and it kept falling and crashing into the middle of the road. And like I said, this was not a really well-traveled road, so there wasn't a ton of people, but you know, we essentially were just playing this game with the ladder, trying to get it to stand up. And like, we thought that it was going to be tall enough that it would actually be able to lean on the power line, but that wasn't the case. And then our plan was, well, let's get it balanced and then just climb up, and then you get the extra 5-6 feet to reach, maybe, you know, even a little bit more, and then you can actually do it. And all we had to do is just touch it, and then, you know, the stipulation was touch it and keep your hand there for 5 seconds. And so we're struggling with this thing, trying to get this thing stood up. We get to a point where we figure out a method where I stand behind it while it's on an angle, because this was the angle of a bridge, and you know, there's this angle and then this ladder going at an angle, and then me standing behind it, kind of trying to create a triangle base, and we got it positioned and standing up, and had that, you know, at the right angle, and my friend started to climb up the ladder, and, you know, I struggled to keep this thing upright while it was slowly tipping, and an unmarked police car drives by and sees what's going on, but doesn't actually stop. Like, we see him drive past, and, you know, we quickly just kind of dropped the ladder, and we just started thinking, oh, crap. And so everybody was kind of like in panic mode at that point. So we decided, let's ditch the ladder and let's get out of there. So we all just, you know, quickly went and ditched the ladder in the high grass that was nearby, and then just took off and like all started walking back and ended up back at the store. And the unmarked car ended up catching up with us and asking what we were doing. And we just all played dumb and we're like, what are you talking about? And they're like, what was the ladder for? And we're like, what ladder? What are you talking about? And of course, you know, we got like a stern talking to, but there was nothing that he could really do. And, you know, he kind of just gave us a warning. He said, you guys shouldn't be there. And, you know, we kind of just decided we'd come back and try this later. And so, you know, it kind of saved us from electrocution, which is a good thing. But, you know, it was interesting. And it was a series of events. And it was fortunate that that guy drove by, because that's really what I guess sparked some real fear in us about getting in trouble. Not so much touching a power line and dying, but just getting in trouble with the police. That just made us think twice. And I remember I was freaking out because I had my father's extension ladder just thrown in the grass, and I was going to get into a lot of trouble. So, you know, I made my friend, the one that was going to climb up and touch the line, you know, later on, a couple hours later, I made him go back up there and help me. And so we went back up when coast was clear and got that ladder and basically sprinted, walked running, you know, the two of us carrying this ladder, and sprinted back to my house and then, you know, stored the ladder again. But, you know, I guess you can call it a cautionary tale of doing something dumb and missing several warnings as to why you shouldn't do this dumb thing. But eventually something stepped in and saved us, and it was a fortunate thing. And I'll say again, never try this at home, you know, because later on we actually found out that those plastic containers or whatever, all it would take is just the slightest gap in it or crack in it, and then you're done. I mean, and that would have just been you know, an awful thing to see, because I imagine that it would have got both of us, and then, you know, and the kind of friends that were with us would have probably just run away and not even tried to save us. I don't even know if they would have called 911. And it's not like we had cell phones back then that, you know, any of them could have called 911 right away. Like, maybe they would have ran to the gas station or the corner store and told somebody to call 911, but I feel like they would have just ran and pretended like nothing happened. So I'm here talking today because of the fortunate events that unfolded with, you know, an unmarked cop car driving by. And, you know, that's just not doing something smart, and being a teenage boy and not doing something smart, bad combination. But that's my intro story for today. And I'm going to continue talking about how to practice safe internet and this second part of practicing safe internet on finding your identity.